of the long waiting. Thus passed the prelude, the first and preliminary period of Jacob's long sojourn with Laban. It was only 1 month, and at its end, the new contract, with its fixed and faraway terminus, came into force. It was a contract of marriage as well as a contract of service, a mixture of the two, such as the mashkim, or presiding judge, had probably not had often come before him, though something similar probably now and again, and which he recognized as a matter susceptible of legal treatment, and also, with the consent of both parties, legally binding. The contract was written out in duplicate, and then discussed with both sides, in order to clear up any doubtful points, and the words of both set down, so that there was clear and apparent proof that they had agreed. This man had said to that man, "Give me thy daughter to wife," and the other man had answered, "What wilt thou give for her?" And the other man had had nothing. Then the above-mentioned man had said, "Seeing that thou canst pay no dowry, nor any presents to hang at the bride's girdle at the betrothal, thou shalt serve me for as many years as the week hath days, and that shall be the price which thou payest, and the bride shall be thine for the nuptials after the end of the term, together with a mina of silver and a maid, which I will give as dowry, but so that the price of the maid shall be reckoned as 2/3 of the mina of silver, and the other 1/3 be paid in metal, or the fruits of the fields." Then said the other man, "So be it. In the name of the king, so be it." Each side took one of the contracts. Whoever shall set himself up against it, in that he behaveth unlawfully, there shall no good come unto him for it. The agreement was sensible. The judge found it fair. And from the business side, Jacob himself had not much to complain of. If he owed his uncle a mina of silver at 60 shekels, 7 years' labor would not suffice to pay the debt, for the average wage of a laborer was 7 shekels a year, and 7 of them would not make up the sum. He felt profoundly that the economic point of view was a very deceptive one, that if there were a just scale, a God's scale, as it were, the side with the 7 years would have made the side with the shekels fly up into the air. But after all, he would spend these years in Rachel's company, and thus love's sacrifice would be mingled with much joy. Besides which, beginning with the signing of the contract, she would be legally betrothed and sealed to him, so that no other man could approach her without being as guilty as though he had led away a married woman. 7 years. 7 years they must wait for each other, these children of brother and sister. They would be at a quite different time of life before they might bring forth sons to each other, and that was a bitter condition which proceeded either from Laban's cruelty or his lack of imagination, and displayed him in short once more, and in the most glaring light, as a man without heart or imagination. Another grievance was his extraordinary greed, and his tendency to overreach even his nearest and dearest. For instance, in the clause in the contract which referred to the dowry, the parental mourning gift, which was such a bad bargain for poor Jacob, particularly as the problematical maid was valued at least twice the sum asked for a fair average slave either in these parts or in the West. But there was no helping this offensive feature, nor any other of the situation. The time when he could drive a better bargain would come, Jacob realized. He felt in his soul the promise of good business and a secret power and capacity which was certainly greater than any resident in the bosom of this underworldly devil of a father-in-law of his, Laban, the man of Aram, whose eyes had become lovely in Rachel his child. As for the 7 years, they were even now in the process of being lived down. It would have been easier to sleep them away, but not only because that was not possible, because it seemed better on the whole to look after them actively, Jacob suppressed the thought in his mind. This he did, and so too should the narrator, and not imagine that he can pass over and obliterate the time with a little sentence like 7 years went by. It is the storyteller's way to say things like that, and yet no one should let the words, if they must be spoken, pass his lips lightly, nor otherwise than heavy with meaning and hesitant with reverence for life, so that the hearer too feels them heavy with meaning. And he marvels how they can pass, those years the end of which one can see only with the understanding but not with the soul, and even pass as though they had been 7 days. For such is the tradition, that the 7 years, before which Jacob had at first quailed with fear, passed by like days, and the tradition must ultimately go back to his own words, must be, as they say, authentic, and also most illuminating. What we have here is certainly no seven-sleeper enchantment, nor indeed any other kind, save that of time itself, whose larger units pass as do the smaller ones, neither slow nor fast, but simply pass. A day has 24 hours. Quite a fair amount of time, with room in it for much life and many thousand heartbeats. Still, from one morning to another, so many of them pass, what with sleeping and waking, one way and another. You do not know how, and just as little do you know how 7 days pass, a week, the unit, a mere 4 of which, suffices the moon to go through all her phases. Jacob did not say that 7 years went as fast as days. He would not have made a comparison so derogatory to the value of 1 day of life. And the day, too, does not go fast, but it goes with its times of day, its morning, midday, afternoon, and evening, one among others. And so likewise does the year, with its seasons, from spring to spring, in the same unqualifiable way, one among others. Thus it was, Jacob said, that 7 years passed to him like days. It is idle to say that a year consists not only of its seasons, the succession of spring, green grazing and sheep shearing, harvest and summer heat, first rains and new planting, snow and frosty nights, and round again to the rosy blossoms of the tamarisk. That is only the frame of the year. The year itself is a filigree of life, heavy with events, an ocean to drink up. Such a filigree of thinking, feeling, acting, and happening, the day is likewise. And the hour, on a smaller scale, if you like, but distinctions of size among time units are very little absolute, and their relative yardstick is the measure of ourselves, our feeling, our adaptation, or the lack of it. 7 days may, under some circumstances, be harder to swallow, a more daring adventure in time, than 7 years. But what do we mean by daring? For whether one plunge hot-blooded or shivering into time's stream, there lives not a soul who is not forced to surrender to it. And nothing more is needed. For it carries us away, tears us along with it, without our marking. And if we look back, lo, the point where we stepped in is far back. It is, for instance, 7 years away, years that have passed like days. No, we cannot even express or distinguish the manner in which man gives himself to time, whether gladly or with misgiving, for the necessity dominates such distinctions and makes them void. No one says that Jacob undertook and entered upon his 7 years with joy, for only after they had passed might he beget children with Rachel. But that was a trouble of the mind which was greatly assuaged by the contrary workings of his vitality, which conditioned his relation to time and time's relation to him. For Jacob was to live into his 106th year, and though his spirit knew it not, yet his body knew it, and the soul of his flesh. And thus 7 years to him, while not so little as 7 years in the sight of God, were yet not nearly so much to him as to one who should live but 50 or 60 years. Thus his soul could more tranquilly envisage the waiting time. And finally, for our general comfort be it said, that it was not pure waiting which he had to bear, for that would have been too long. Pure waiting is torture. No one could bear to sit 7 years or 7 days, or walk up and down and wait, as one can do for perhaps an hour. In the large and larger time units, that cannot happen, because the waiting gets longer and thinner, and at the same time more densely occupied with mere living, so that for long stretches of time it falls victim to sheer forgetfulness. That is to say, it withdraws into the depth of the soul and is no longer consciously present. Thus, a half hour of pure and mere waiting is more frightful and a crueler test of patience than a waiting that is put into a life of 7 years. What we await close at hand affects us, precisely because of its nearness, as a much keener and more immediate stimulus than if it were far off. It transforms our patience into nerve and muscle-consuming impatience. It makes us morbid. We literally do not know what to do with our limbs. While a long-term waiting leaves us in peace, it not only permits but forces us to think of other things and do other things, for we must live. Such is the origin of the surprising truth that no matter with what degree of longing we wait, we do it not with more difficulty but with more ease, the more distant in time lies the goal of our hopes. These consoling reflections, which simply amount to the statement that nature and the soul have ways of helping themselves out, proved particularly true in Jacob's case. He served, ostensibly, as Laban's shepherd, and a shepherd, we know, has much idle time. Hours on end, whole half-days long, his lot is spacious contemplation, and if he is waiting for something, his waiting is not enveloped in much activity. But here was the virtue of long-sight waiting, for it was by no means the case that Jacob could not sit, nor stand, nor lie, but ran about the plain with his head between his hands. Rather, his soul was tranquil, if also a little sad, and waiting formed not the treble, but the ground base of his life. Of course he thought much of Rachel and their children to be when he was far from her, with the dog Mardukah, as he lay propped on his elbows with his cheeks on his hands, or with his hands folded in the back of his neck, one leg supported on the other knee in the shade of rocks or shrubbery, or leaning on his staff in the wide plain with his sheep grazing round him. And not alone of her, but of God, and all the tales he knew, the near and far, his flight and wandering, of Eliphaz and the proud vision of Bethel, of the feast of the cursing of Esau, of Yitzhak the blind, of Abram, of the tower, the flood, of Adapah or Adama in the garden of paradise, which reminded him of the garden which he had helped his clod of a father-in-law to plant through his blessing, and which had meant such increase of prosperity to the man. I may say that in the first year of the contract, Jacob did not, or not often, keep the sheep. Either Abcheba, the 20-shekel man, or one of Laban's daughters did it, and Jacob devoted himself, by his uncle's wish and command, to the works that arose out of his discovery, the laying of the water system and the building of the pond, for which he utilized a natural hollow in the ground, evened it out with the spades, walled it round, and hardened the floor with stone cement. At last, the garden was in being. Laban laid great stress on having this new enterprise carried out with the aid of the blessing-bearing hands, for he was now quite convinced that the blessing, so shrewdly obtained, was indeed efficacious, and flattered himself at his own cunning in enlisting it to the interest of his own business. Certain it was plain and clear that Rebekah's son brought good luck, almost against his will, that his mere presence could set in vigorous motion enterprises which had seemed destined to drag and to founder. What a prosperous bustle there was in Laban's court and in his fields! What digging, hammering, plowing, and planting! Laban had borrowed money to enlarge his business, and to make the necessary purchases. Isulanu's sons, at Haran, had advanced at him, despite their loss of the lawsuit over the water, for they were cool and practical heads, personally quite unemotional. The loss of the suit seemed to them no ground at all for refusing to do business with the man who had won it. It was precisely the advantage by means of which he had won it that now made him look like a good investment in their eyes. They lent him money without a thought. But so it is in business, and Laban was not at all surprised. He needed the bank's money, if only to pay and feed the 3 new servants, who were the property of a lender in the city. Jacob directed the work of these, sometimes giving a helping hand, and overseeing the whole, for it goes without saying that his position in the house, even without any agreement on the subject, was not in the least like that of these crop-headed hirelings and slaves, who wore the name of their owner written in indelible dye in the right hand. The 7-year contract, down below among the teraphim, was far from putting him into their category. He was the nephew of the house, the betrothed of its daughter, and he was lord of the water sources to boot, and engineer, and head gardener. All this Laban conceded to him, and knew very well why he did so. Also, he knew why he entrusted Jacob with the larger part of the buying of tools, material, seeds, and plants needed for the new operations, upon which the borrowed money was laid out. He confided in his nephew's lucky hand, and with right, for it always turned out to his advantage, and he got better material than when he dealt himself, being sour of visage and lacking in the blessing. But Jacob profited too, and this period saw the slender beginnings of the prosperity which was to assume such large proportions. For he conceived his dealings in the city and with business associates scattered throughout the country, not in the fixed and rigid sense that he was Laban's authorized middleman and agent, but as though he were commissioner and factor, and such a very good, experienced, sociable, and conversable one, that he could always put aside a smaller or greater private gain in cash or goods, and was soon the owner of a little flock of sheep and goats, even before he had begun to tend Laban's sheep. God the king had cried out to the sound of the harps that Jacob should return with riches to Yitzhak's house, and that was at once a promise and a command, the latter, in so far as such promises can hardly be expected to be fulfilled without human cooperation. Should he prove God the king a liar, and bring his words to shame out of sheer carelessness and unlimited consideration towards an uncle who himself dealt with affairs in the most grimly practical manner, and yet failed to draw any advantage from them? Jacob was not even tempted to make such a blunder. Let nobody think that he cheated Laban and secretly overreached him. No, for Laban was in general aware of what Jacob did. As to details, he drew down the corner of his mouth and deliberately shut his eyes, for the man saw that things almost always turned out to better advantage than when he kept them in his own 2 heavy fists. Also, he had some reason to feel afraid of Jacob and to connive at what he did, for Jacob was very sensitive and required to be dealt gently with, out of consideration for the blessing. He said so quite openly, and warned Laban once for all in plain words, "If my lord check me and set me to rights in every small matter that falleth to my advantage in his service, and if he looketh askance, when not he alone hath some advantage from his servant's wisdom, then quencheth he my heart in my breast, and the blessing in my body, so that his affairs no longer prosper in my hands. For the Lord my God spoke in a dream to the man Belanu, from whom I have bought seed corn for thee, that thou needest for the enlarging of thy fields. And he said, It is Jacob, bearer of the blessing, with whom thou dealest, and I guide his head and his feet. Therefore have a care that thou reckon the 5 core which he will buy from thee for 5 shekels, with 250 selahs the core, and not 240 or 30, as thou mightest reckon with Laban, else I will deal with thee. Jacob will give thee 9 selahs of oil instead of a shekel, and 5 minas of wool instead of another, besides a good mutton of the value of a shekel and a half, and for the rest a lamb of his flock. All that will he pay for thee for thy 5 core of seed corn instead of 5 shekels, besides much friendly words and looks, so that thou wilt have pleasant trading with thy purchaser. But if thou makest him worse prices, then beware, for I will come amongst thy flocks and strike them with pestilence, and I will visit thy wife with barrenness, and the children thou already hast with blindness and folly, and thou shalt learn to know me. Then did Belanu fear the Lord my God, and did as he had been commanded, so that I had the barley cheaper than another person, and much more cheaply than my uncle. For let him try himself and see if he could have made a deal with 9 selahs of oil for a shekel, and 5 minas of wool for another. When in the market one gets 12 selahs and more, and 6 minas of wool, not reckoning in the exchange. And for the other shekel and a half, hadst thou not given at least 3 lambs, or a pig and a lamb? Therefore I took 2 lambs from thy flock, and marked them with my mark, and they are now mine. But what is that between thee and me? Am I not the bridegroom of thy child, and through her is not what is mine likewise thine? If thou wilt that the blessing profit thee, and I serve thee with wisdom and out of a willing heart, then must a reward and promise spur me on, else my soul weary in thy service, and my blessing come not to profit thy works.